You're listening to Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
We wrap up our summer rerun season on Radio EcoShock with one of our most popular programs. It comes from 2008. It's called Runaway Train, and yes, it's about the economy.
Welcome to Radio EcoShock. I am your host, Alex Smith. You'll get full spectrum coverage of both the economic mess and the environmental meltdown. We'll travel to Wall Street, Tokyo, and your future. Our sources come from underground radio, offshore broadcasts, and a new tide of citizen journalists in the blogosphere. Canadians sure know what falling money feels like. Ouch. The same thing is happening in Australia, to the euro, and even worse for developing countries all over the world. It's yet another phase of the prolonged crash we are experiencing. This time, right now, it's the currency squeeze. The American dollar is going up, which is unbelievable, considering how bankrupt that country is. The Japanese yen is going even higher than that. Both are considered safer currencies than anything else, so people are going there. However short-lived this currency game may be, it is causing financial earthquakes all over the world. For example, if you borrowed money in most of the developing countries, foreign lenders didn't trust the Nigerian currency or the Mongolian, whatever their currency may be. So they all set up debts in terms of U.S. dollars or the Japanese yen. Now the U.S. dollar is skyrocketing as debts come due all over the world. It costs far more to repay them. That hits foreign companies hard and even foreign governments, as we'll hear shortly. Canadians who borrowed with repayments set in U.S. dollars would pay 20% more, for example. People, business, and governments overseas likely won't be able to pay at all. That means more massive defaults on loans. When loans default, the banks, hedge funds, and insurance companies like AIG have to pay out more, and their assets drop. When assets drop, these banks and investment houses have to raise more capital to meet government requirements. They may be forced to sell off stocks to do it, or real estate, when the prices for both are already tanked. That means more downward pressure on stock and real estate prices, you know that. And it again reduces the assets of the bank or corporation. More forced sales result in a dizzying downward spiral. We'd call it a positive feedback effect, except there's not much positive about it. The dollar is also going up out of sheer panic all over the globe. Big investors are hauling their bucks out of hedge funds and even the money market at record rates to buy the alleged safety of U.S. Treasury bonds backed by the American taxpayer. To buy U.S. Treasuries, you need U.S. dollars, and that is another factor driving up the American dollar, even as the U.S. corporations report horrible earnings or straight-up losses in the billions of dollars. It's all upside down. The impact of the rising American dollar is great, possibly fatal to some governments and businesses, but the cost of the soaring Japanese currency is likely the final blow to our current understanding of the capitalist dream. Why? Let's listen in to a clip from Max Keiser. Max is a former Wall Street banker type who left the U.S. more or less in disgust to live in Paris and then London. He does a radio show on the alternative Radiance FM in London. The piece we are about to hear was on Al Jazeera, of all places, the only outlet that would broadcast Keiser's radical talk about economics. I found it through an American underground show called Unwelcome Guests at unwelcomeguests.org. That's a great program, incidentally, hosted by Lynn Gary and broadcast on 21 college and community radio stations in the U.S. Lynn often rebroadcasts segments and speakers from Radio EcoShock, too, another way this program gets out there to a North American audience. Anyway, here is Max Keiser explaining, in easy terms, the strange phenomenon called the yen-carry trade.
Over the past few years, borrowing money via the carry trade has seemed risk-free. But recently, central bankers have been warning that if the yen or the Swiss franc rise, prices can move against investors rapidly and even destabilize the global financial system. Max Keiser investigates in Iceland.
Iceland's been buying a lot of Britain's high street recently. How does a country with less than 300,000 population, who's got a GDP of $13 billion, less than one-tenth the size of Google, end up buying hundreds of billions of dollars worth of valuable properties here in London and Britain, including the West Ham Football Club?
I believe this financial miracle comes from cheap credit. a fancy word for debt. Never in history has the entire world been so awash in debt. And all this debt begins, many say, with something called the carry trade. This carry trade usually begins in the currency markets, otherwise known as the Forex markets, the biggest market in the world where $3 trillion worth of trades happen every single day. I'll show you how the carry trade is done. First, I need to borrow some money from a country with low interest rates.
Let's flip this coin to decide. Heads, Tokyo. Tails, Zurich.
Tails, Zurich.
Whoa! It's a little bit too much on that one. The Forex market can be a very dangerous place. You never know, day to day, what kind of trades you might encounter, what kind of danger might be out there. Zurich, of course, one of the most dangerous towns in the world, if you're not lucky. Here's something I can do. With these Swiss francs, I can actually perform a little bit of Forex legerdemain. By taking these Swiss francs, and then by jumping back into the Forex market, and coming out in another town, I'll show you how we can make some money. Wow, so the currency in Zurich has been magically transformed into the local currency here in Iceland, the Icelandic krona. And I immediately pick up 5, 6, 7% of my money. I didn't get this money by manufacturing or producing or savings. I just got it from interest rate speculating, interest rate arbitrage. Economics appears to have gone through a radical transformation where the king is the speculator and the chump who's caught working for a living in a factory is considered yesterday's news.
Today's news is debt. More and more consumers, corporations, investors, and speculators are taking on more and more debt thanks to low global interest rates. Glenn Stevens, governor of Australia's Reserve Bank, said of Japan's near 0% interest rate policy, quote, "There is something very strange about a G3 country giving out free money. This has an effect on global markets. It is by no means clear that it is a healthy state of affairs to persist."
Dr. Paul Walker, CEO, GFMS Limited.
The governor's probably on the money there, that when you have a situation where the Japanese are effectively giving away their cash, you can borrow it for free, for all intents and purposes, or maybe a few basis points, that does have global implications and necessarily would hold the global interest rate environment lower than it otherwise would be.
So all this borrowed money doesn't always end up in the currency. A lot of it goes into real estate, it goes into art. A lot of it goes into fueling mergers and acquisitions, which is part of another piece of the global bubble. It's all so easy with free money. What could possibly go wrong? You know, whether it's 0% or 2 or 3 basis points, it doesn't really make a heck of a lot of difference because it's still debt. And ordinarily, when there's huge demand for debt, the price of debt or interest rates go higher. But what we're seeing now in the global banking cartel is an agreement, more or less, that when there's more demand for debt, they simply make the parameters to borrow less stringent. They never close the debt window. So what we have is asset bubbles. We have house prices and art markets and stocks and bonds going up in price, but not as fast as the level of debt. So the wealth is completely illusory, unless, of course, this is some kind of financial anti-gravity machine and debt never means anything for the rest of our lives, which, of course, is impossible. Every once in a while, there is a reconciliation in these markets, and you do have the asset bust, the deflation, and the occasional depression.
What should happen in a global economy? You should be rewarded for savings. That's what your parents taught you. That's what you learn in economics 101. What's happened in the last 5, 6 years? You're not rewarded for savings just by putting your cash into interest-bearing assets, because in the U.S., you've got negative returns on that in real terms. Why would you bother doing it? You have to look elsewhere. And this is not just true of the man and woman in the street. It's true of corporations and investment funds. You've got to look elsewhere, which is why you've seen asset bubbles appearing in housing. That's your man in the street who's able to participate in that quite easily by buying housing.
Tell you in America that you've got a healthy economy, and yet you've got 2 straight years of negative savings. They talk about wealth being
built up in people's homes, and yet the foreclosure rates have never been higher. They talk about people achieving the American dream, and yet poverty rates are skyrocketing. It's all nonsense.
So, we're in a world in which speculators are making money by borrowing virtually free money from Japan or Switzerland and investing it in markets, assets, and currencies around the globe. And the man on the street is, quote-unquote, getting rich from the asset bubbles caused by all this borrowing. Asset prices have never been higher, but debt loads have never been even higher still. So how long can this laissez-faire tale last?
The carry trade revolves around being able to borrow an asset, and when you've borrowed it, you sell it, you take the proceeds from that, you invest it in another higher-yielding asset. But of course, the key consideration when going into the carry trade is that the asset that you're borrowing, you're effectively shorting it, that asset's not going to go up in value.
That's right. This carry trade scheme does have one potentially lethal problem. It's called unwinding. If the borrowed asset, in this case the yen or Swiss franc, starts to go up in value, the carry trade stops working because the cost of the original loan goes up. So everyone around the world, the bankers, the investors, and the speculators, tries to cash in their inflated stocks, bonds, currency, and real estate investments at the same time in order to pay off that low interest rate debt before it rises further in value. It is a run on the global banking system, an extremely ugly situation, and warnings about this unwinding are coming fast and furious from central bankers around the world.
Jean-Claude Trichet, the head of the European Central Bank, said in February of 2007, quote, one-way bet, and of course by this he means the carry trade, in the present circumstances would not be, it seems to us, appropriate. We want the markets to be aware of the risks they contain. Malcolm Knight, general manager of the Bank of International Settlements, the central bank of central banks, quote, there is a rising leverage in the financial system, and we have some very crowded trades in some areas of the foreign exchange markets. Mr. Knight said, speaking at the World Economic Forum in Davos, quote, together, these could create the potential for a very rapid repricing in financial markets. Crowded trades. Well, this is Fed speak. Crowded trades in this sense means that, according to the bankers who run the banking establishments, maybe there's not enough suckers left to make this thing really work. So he's telegraphing for those in the market to maybe get out of the market now.
Tim Lee, PI Economics.
The most famous case of yen carry trade unwinding we've had occurred in 1998 at the time of Russia, when Russia defaulted on its debt, and a large investment fund called Long-Term Capital Management basically went bankrupt, and that triggered in markets an unwinding of carry trades at that time. And the yen appreciated extremely rapidly when that happened. Some people have been concerned that, you know, we could have a repeat of that this time. But I think if I'm correct, then the size of the carry trade now is much larger than it was then.
Dr. Paul Walker.
But it's been a fairly substantial trade over the last few years. It will be. It could have global ramifications, there's no doubt about it. But it does revolve around one key question. What is the size of this trade? And we, quite frankly, we don't really know, because discerning and splitting out the genuine trade-related activities in borrowing yen and the, if you like, the speculative, because the carry trade is simply a speculative activity. Until we can split those out and get the data sets on those adequate, we don't know. But I think there are signs out there that there are worries in the global economy.
Analysts, economists, central bankers, and politicians are warning us of the dangers of an unwinding carry trade and one-way bets. So why do speculators and investors keep playing recklessly in the carry trade traffic?
People are perceiving that there isn't that much risk in doing these this borrowing in low interest rate currency. The risk of a rapid exchange rate movement occurring in a short space of time isn't very high. And I think an important factor that's contributed to that is past intervention in the currency markets by central banks, particularly, and we're talking about the yen carry trade, the intervention that the Ministry of Finance and Bank of Japan did over 2003-2004, when the yen would have risen substantially at that time, but the Bank of Japan, on the orders of the Ministry of Finance in Japan, stepped into the market and prevented the yen moving above about the 104-105 rate when it was going up.
Market intervention. That's just another word for market manipulation. These bankers are keen to keep rates low by making credit available, but they have two very devastating effects on the global economy. Number one, they are penalizing workers whose pension funds are being put at risk, and they're also making it impossible for the natural supply and demand curve to come into sync in the global markets, and debt is building up like hot magma of hot money. It may look tranquil, but once it blows, look out. Financial analysts and bankers argue that the financial carry trade must be allowed to continue because we almost enjoy the wealth and asset appreciation that it creates. But the wealth and asset creation is the result of massive yen carry trade. So their arguments are specious at best, and it's doing a lot of damage along the way to the workers, the savers, and the global economy, which is exposed to way too much risk.
Our view is simply that the central banks of the world have been putting off the day of reckoning. Their interest rate environment has enabled them to sustain this. The buying up, for example, of U.S. debt has been a key component, the key pillar globally of these imbalances that have emerged. But the longer they delay this, the more serious the day of reckoning is going to be, and it will come.
Well, here we are back on a high street in London. What did we learn from all of this? Well, what we know is that the Icelandic krona is the global financial currency of the month, the flavor of the month club. Hot money in, my guess is going to see hot money out. Thailand, remember that in the late 90s? Didn't last. And of course, what will happen to all of these brokers and bankers and private equity groups and hedge fund managers once the party's over? The punch bowl is taken away, and Iceland no longer has the hot currency of the month.
Max Kaiser reporting for Al Jazeera English TV in August 2007. The URL of his website is a bit difficult on radio, so your best bet is to Google Max Kaiser, spelt K-E-I-S-E-R.
Keep in mind, Max did that program back in 2007. Pretty well every day, I find some banking expert on TV saying, well, no one could have predicted all this. Or they say the same thing to Congress. Well, really? In fact, there were almost too many predictions of the crash. Nouriel Roubini, a professor of economics at New York University, detailed exactly why the financial system was unstable and would crash hard way back in 2006. The mainstream media tried hard to discredit Roubini, calling him a kook. Now that he is too right, the financial press and TV channels feature him regularly. Find this key document titled The Rising Risk of a Systematic Financial Meltdown, The 12 Steps to Financial Disaster. It was originally published February 5, 2008 by Nouriel Roubini at his website, rgemonitor.com. His update of October 8th is available free online at his site, and the original is all over the net. 12 Steps to Financial Disaster by Roubini. I'm Alex Smith, and this is Radio EcoShock. But now it looks like mainstream media is becoming less the bully we thought it is. It's becoming irrelevant and insolvent. Take this news item. The famous organ of America, the New York Times, may very well join thousands of other firms in bankruptcy. The Times has over $1 billion in debt that needs to be rolled over in a market where nobody is lending. The newspaper reports having only about $46 million in liquid assets. Newspaper advertising is not just decreasing, it is plunging. The same is happening to newspapers all over North America. One of the biggest sponsors of the papers, and of TV news, I might add, are the car companies. Huge full-page ads and tons of TV commercials selling those heavy SUVs and pickup trucks that make you a real man. As you know, those American car companies are failing, likely headed toward bankruptcy. Truck and SUV sales, which provided most of the profits for those companies, are dead, dead, dead. Few people know that the U.S. Congress slipped in an extra $25 billion for the American car companies just a few weeks ago. They put it into a spending bill in October. The money was supposed to pay for conversion to greener cars, hybrids, and electrics. But few expect the companies to last that long or to spend it on anything green. GM is in a last-ditch negotiation to merge quickly with Chrysler, which is basically going out of business, shutting plants all over. GM has also approached the government to help facilitate that merger, which no doubt means more billions in loans. Ford is also losing multi-billions of dollars every quarter. Getting a car loan in the U.S. has become a major adventure, even in Canada, if you can get one at all. There are lots of big cars sitting around the lots not selling. The failing car companies are trying the last advertising, but it's not going to work. If you look at Canadian newspapers like the Vancouver Sun, the pages are shrinking in size almost by the day. That's good news for trees, of course. Part of the problem? In the old days, there was a saying you could measure the health of a newspaper by the amount of classified ads it carried. The classifieds are shrinking to almost nothing, being replaced by Craigslist, eBay, and other internet sources. Full-blown newspapers may not be able to carry on, and they know it. Ditto at least one big U.S. TV network. I use YouTube for almost everything. Why bother with all those commercials? Once the hundreds of millions spent on U.S. election advertising withers away in November, we'll begin to see the pain in the mainstream media financial reports. That means, ta-da, we will depend more and more on localized volunteer media, on citizen media. That is already happening to a degree as networks like CNN try to add more user-provided video, the iReport phenomenon. Getting back to the financial crisis, here's a novel explanation of the problem. It comes from a hedge fund CEO named André Lahde, spelled L-A-H-D-E. André is the bright boy whose fund Lahde Capital made 866% profit last year by betting on the subprime collapse. Last month, after making countless millions, André Lahde closed his fund and went home. He left a goodbye message on the blog called FT Alphaville. André suggests the current mess is only partly criminal greed. The rest is just stupidity due to the promotion of Ivy League families. In other words, we may be experiencing the failure of financial aristocracy. They promoted their sons who, just like George Bush, weren't really all that bright. André Lahde writes, "I was in this game for the money. The low-hanging fruit, i.e. idiots whose parents paid for prep school, Yale, and then Harvard MBA, were there for the taking. These people, who were often truly not worthy of the education they received, or supposedly received, rose to the top of companies such as AIG, Bear Stearns and Lehman Brothers, and all levels of our government. All of this behavior supporting the aristocracy only ended up making it easier for me to find people stupid enough to take the other side of my trades. God bless America. I now have time to repair my health, which was destroyed by the stress I layered onto myself over the past 2 years, as well as my entire life, where I had to compete for spaces in universities and graduate schools, jobs and assets under management, with those who had all the advantages, rich parents, that I did not. May meritocracy be part of a new form of government which needs to be established." That's the end of a quote from André Lahde. Meanwhile, the famous $700 billion bailout in the U.S. has turned into at least $2 trillion of funny money pumped into the banking system. Few Americans will actually see it. Some of the American banks are using bailout money to buy weaker regional banks. For example, PNC Financial Services Group used $5.2 billion of taxpayers' money to buy another bank, National City Group. That makes PNC the fifth largest bank in the U.S., so you're paying for a conglomeration of power. Other failing banks in the U.S. are hoping Canadian banks will save them. Royal Bank, Toronto Dominion Bank, and Bank of Montreal already own and operate some U.S. consumer outlets. Royal Bank alone spent over $2 billion Canadian dollars on U.S. acquisitions, such as Flag Financial in Atlanta and Alabama National Bank Corporation.
Toronto Dominion just spent $7.5 billion to buy a New Jersey bank called Commerce Bank Corp. The Canadian banks have been more stable due to tougher regulations and less stupid behavior, but will that last if they keep buying weak or toxic American banks? It's not just the banks. Now falling, national governments in many parts of the world. Earlier in this program, we heard about Iceland and the risky bets made by recently denationalized Icelandic banks, partly using Japanese currency exchanges. The economy of Iceland has basically been crushed. The banks were nationalized again a few days ago, but the Icelandic government is not as big to survive the debt. For the first time since 1977, the International Monetary Fund, the IMF, has been asked to save a Western developed country, Iceland. Stranger still, police departments and municipalities in Britain, not to mention zillions of personal savers, have their money tied up or lost in UK branches of those Icelandic banks. According to the Guardian newspaper, 108 councils in England, Scotland, and Wales had deposited £798 million in Icelandic banks. For example, 15 different British police departments went for the high interest rates offered by the Icelandic banks, but now can't get their money out. The situation is so extreme that the UK government used some weird anti-terrorism law to freeze Icelandic bank assets in the UK, a last-ditch effort to recoup some of the money. Which shows how pervasive these secret anti-terrorism laws are. Maybe they will shut down the banking system for a week or more due to the danger of economic terrorism? Think I'm joking? People like the Prime Minister of Italy, Silvio Berlusconi, suggested shutting down all stock markets for a period while rearranging the whole world financial system. Many other serious people have wondered whether a bank holiday would suddenly be proclaimed if the silent runs on the banks continue. That is, people are removing billions upon billions of dollars from money market accounts, from weak banks, using ATMs and online banking. You will not see the lines of people around the corner as happened in the 1930s for a bank run. This is the internet age, and people are already withdrawing incredible amounts of cash to stuff under the mattress or bury in the backyard. I'd call it an internet rumor, except that the Wall Street Journal, Forbes, and Bloomberg are quietly reporting on this phenomenon. Nobody is sure which bank will go bankrupt next. Meanwhile, the IMF is being kept busy indeed. Hungary is in deep trouble and asking for an IMF loan last week. People all over Eastern Europe are in distress, partly because their mortgages were in Swiss francs, not local currency. The East European currencies have collapsed, and so has their economy. More foreclosures and a return to poverty not seen since Soviet times is possible. The same thing, complete with IMF bailout, has happened to the Ukraine. The Ukraine, of all places. Eastern Europe is well off compared with affairs in South America. The Brazilian stock market has crashed. Foreign capital is rushing towards the exits. Development may stop. It looks like Argentina may go bankrupt for the second time in 6 years. The government of Argentina just seized about $30 billion worth of private pensions in order to stave off complete collapse. It may not work. Their banking system is in tatters. Even the fast-growing Asian economies are suddenly tumbling. South Korean banks are in deep trouble. The government is trying to rescue them. The Korean stock market is bleeding. Japan's stock market just hit a 20-year low, breaking boundaries no one expected. No one can tell what this might mean politically anywhere in Asia.
We'll be right back in just a minute with more Radio EcoShock.